You're listening to Sound Poetry. I am your host, David Gilmore. You're listening to Sound Poetry on Radio Tacoma, KTAH 101.9 FM. And I'm your host, David Gilmore. Today we are engaging with a poet who has lived on the waters. He covers the waterfront of the Salish Sea and is well-known probably in poetry readings for his very fine new book, Broken by Water. Welcome, Gary Thompson, to Sound Poetry.
Thank you, David, and thank you for inviting me. Probably bigger thanks to you as host for putting so many fine Northwest poems on the air and getting them out to the world. The Sound Poetry Archive is a treasure.
Gary's well accomplished in not just sailing. He's enjoyed his sailing life and has much to benefit from it, as you'll hear in his poetry. But Gary once taught poetry as a professor at Chico, the University of California system of universities, and also was an instructor, a professor of American Indian literature, which is, I think, exemplified also in your book, which I think people will recognize as you read those thematic works. The name of his work that won Washington State Book finalist is called Broken by Water, Salish Sea Years 1921. And besides that, Gary's got, what, five collections, or is this the sixth collection then?
This is the sixth collection.
So we have many poems to listen to, and in some respects, I might ask Gary to read two or three in sequence, because he has arranged them, I think, to have a certain pattern of detailing the life. His boat Keats, a trawler. Gary, mm-hmm. The trawler that you bought, was this a trawler that actually did a lot of fishing?
No, it was always a pleasure boat. It was built in 1978 by CHB in Taiwan. So it's always been a pleasure boat, but it's modeled after or designed basically on a trawler hull. And so, you know, it could be adapted to fishing if we had wanted to, or somebody else had wanted to. Mm-hmm. It's a tri-cabin. And it, I guess I can tell people this, or it may or may not be a good thing to tell people this, but if you want to see a photo of Keats, you can go to GaryThompsonPoetry.com under the readings and events schedule. There's a photo there.
All right. And also you have the wonderful postcard that Broken by Water with the After Vandalism poem on it. That is something that people will find in the book when they purchase the book.
Correct. Every book, I believe, that's been sent out is supposed to have that postcard. So,
well, let's start out with your hermitage, the idea of making a new life.
Okay. I like to call this my origin story, or my island origin story, maybe origin myth even. It's a factual accounting of why I live on an island. My hermitage. I live on an island in the Salish Sea because I love boats. That's what I say when asked why I chugged off the edge of the map aboard Keats, and how deep in life I stepped ashore for R&R and found my lost self home. Islands are like shells in the surf of continental drift, tumbled, some weathered for eons, Others still smooth shelters a hermit might crawl into to be safe, a portal he bears everywhere like a dear gift.
This is your finding self and home. The self
yes.
that is the
yes.
home, the very, home that is the self.
Yes. Very much so. We've lived in the Northwest since 1998. First 7, 8 years, we lived in Port Orchard. So we were a little bit more mainland, even though it was a peninsula, pretty much surrounded by water. And we used the boat often then. We bought the boat in 2004. But then we wanted to be closer to the waters we loved, and that was particularly in the Gulf Islands. And so we just chugged away from Port Orchard and ended up here in Friday Harbor on San Juan Island.
So San Juan Island has been your home most of this century then?
Yeah, well, we moved here in 2007.
You left California before it actually was starting to burn up.
Yes, it was. In fact, I was just thinking of that. I'm going to read a poem later that talks about leaving California, leaving it because it wasn't dangerous enough or it was too safe. And of course, after I left, Northern California became the most dangerous place to live in the world, it seemed. That's not really true. I think of these two poems as kind of a pair of poems. In a reading, I would read them both together very quickly, but inversion. On sky-heavy mornings like this, we smell salt in our dreams, taste brine on our lips as we breathe. And if we are steeped in sea matters, we mark where each star ought to be on the blank chalkboard of sky, when we rise before dawn to check anchor. And if we are not wise in sea ways, we still fix our eyes on an imagined horizon for answers. Listen past the invisible for dangers, water slapping at our hull. Salt, salt, salt.
Yes, so the slapping at the hull and this sort of ominous time of just listening to the slapping of the salt, salt. Yeah,
right. Yeah, it can be gentle too, but just the idea that salt pervades everything and when you're on the water particularly, although I've noticed it on land when we have an inversion of that the sky is so low that it just, everything feels briny.
Yes. And you're going to tell us more about some of the dangers of not just the salt, the way salt can corrode, but also the way you're caught in fogs and different weather conditions which beset people
right.
on the water.
This section of the book is called Invent the Boat. It starts with a couple of quotes, epigraphs. This is an island. You need a boat. And that's a sales slogan from a local marine store. And this is the one that I've kept in my life for years, decades. A boat is just an island waiting to sink. I first heard that when I was in my 20s and I was dory fishing in Oregon and an old dory fisherman drunk was saying that as if it was the main lesson in life. And I suppose on a boat, it might be on a small boat. The first lesson of boats. Any boat will break down. Any boat will break apart on rocks. Any boat will break down off rocky shores. Any boat will break away from sure moorings. Any boat will break sheer with any other boat and foul anchors. Any boat will break a lubber's bank. A broken boat will break an old salt's crust. Any damn boat will break.
So early on in your boating life, you probably realized the cost of boating, yachting, trawling.
But yes.
The Lubbers Bank, yeah. It's interesting that trawlers, when they fish for the cod, they fish on the banks, the Grand Banks, is right. An area of the Atlantic, right, for trawlers. And I always think, yeah, how that was named quite aptly, that there ought to be some Grand Banks around there because you...
Yeah, we do have the Salmon Bank right off the southern tip of Friday Harbor. And that's, of course, where the good fishing is and where all kinds of salmon fishing go on, not just trawling. But
right. So it's a fishing bank, essentially, right?
Right.
Or do they call is it the banking of the land? I wonder.
It gets shallow, so the fish come up.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's easier to catch them there.
So let's do probability.
This is an experience that anybody who lives on the Sound, and particularly if you're dependent on the Washington State ferry system, anybody who's ridden the ferries often enough will have had this experience. Probability theory. Last week, this very ferry, the Tillicum, broke down in the middle of Puget Sound on its run to West Seattle. I was one of many on this rusty crate of cars, bobbing in the shipping lanes while tugs with barges plowed to port and low in water freighters crossed our bow on their way across the world. We bobbed on the Sound with scuttled evening plans. Now, here I go again, a man, a boat, and water to be crossed, a fool in love with his errand.
Yes, the words of the Oregonian fisherman come back again.
Yes.
Yeah. And so that does certainly give you a feeling of one kind of being stalled, but you've got others about your own situation of stalling. And it's really interesting. You've got to expect that, right? That fisherman that talked about a boat is going to go down. It could go down. They do drown.
Yes. Yeah. And no matter how cautious you are and how well-maintained a boat is, it can always get in trouble. And you pretty much have to accept that as part of the adventure of being on the water. This next poem is Provision Boats, which, as David mentioned, sort of brings up my father, who grew up in Michigan. And for some reason, and we never learned why, he became very fascinated by the idea of neap tide, twice a month tides that there's very little difference between high and low tide. So the water stays basically at the same level through two or three cycles. Provision boats. Neap tides are best for loading boat. It takes no genius deckhand on Keats to figure out. My father learned neap tides in school in Michigan, far from any true tidal action. But those two words became a code for something secret he repeated in his diaries. At deepest neap, a gravel barge arrives each year at Jackson's Beach to offload stones on island trucks all day. The level ramp ashore lies level. No luck, no genius needed. Father, 10 years gone, a neap-tied man in life, steady, a provision boat set out to sea.
Yes, the neap-tied man, a provision boat set out to sea. So he came to live with you for a while?
No, he was never here on the boat. He was never on the boat. My mother, he was caring for my mother in his last years. My mother had dementia. And my mother, we finally brought my mother out here to for her final years. But he just sort of, for some reason, fell in love with the word neap or the idea of neap tides. And that when we came across his diaries from, you know, high school, basically, and early college, we found that he repeated that phrase often. So that's the only way it works into it.
It's not a very common word anyway. It's mostly, I think, with tide, neap tide, right? But maybe he caught on to the idea of the leveling, the fact that it's a leveling experience, that normally something might sink or rise, but this one is a steady tide.
I think, you know, psychologically, that's probably true for him, even when he was a young man. It certainly was true as a knowing him as a father.
Well, you might have felt that when you emphasized this. Perhaps it's something that we often do intuitively with poetry, isn't it?
Right.
So we're going to continue with some Life on the Water memoir experience, this time with a toddler at this time, or a young person at this time.
Yes. First of all, we already know that the boat's name is Keats. And at one point, several years in, my wife decided that we ought to name the dinghy Fanny, for Fanny Braun, Keats's betrothed, as they said in the 19th century. And so at some point, she actually had a decal made up that said, Fanny B, tender to Keats, which Fanny Braun supposedly was tender to John Keats, but yeah, let us hope so. So our dinghy has been named Fanny B for quite a while, and this is sort of an experience in the dinghy. My granddaughter, well, tender to. Finley LaRue squirms in the dinghy we named Fanny B, tender to Keats, our old trawler. She's an uneasy 4-year-old tricked into a Barbie doll life jacket and floating inches above water she can't see the bottom of, and she's unsure about this grandpa adventure. Poppy? Let's look for Popeye, I say, the local one-eyed harbor seal I've told her stories about the past few days. So Finley takes the watch, scans our tiny horizon, stares down into the sun-streaked depths, then trails her hand in the water we row through. No Popeye today. It's just Finley and Poppy, the two of us, zigzagging the marina fairways as she pulls one oar, then the other, new oarlocks screeching with each stroke. Whale, she says, pointing at a squeaky lock. It does need oil, I repeat dumbly, musing on how she already knows this workaday world most of us are born to, while we jig along with the squeak and quiet of Fanny's song back to Keats.
Fanny even had a song, huh?
Well, she does now.
But this is your song. The poem is your song.
Right. It's now Fanny B's song, Squeaking. Thank you.
And the Foxtrot 33, I would like to ask you why it's Foxtrot 33, although Foxtrot is a three-step, right?
Foxtrot for the F. If you're coming into a harbor, the harbor master will say, well, we'll put you in Foxtrot 33, and that means you're going to be in on F dock in 33 slip. Right. And this is spring, Foxtrot 33. It's a lamb calm March morning in the marina, the cabin heater cranked up against the dank day, with more rain due soon. Up and down the docks, winter grungy boats await spring swabbing, bright work and wax, but most of all, the fitting out into actual boats again, boats that ply the Salish Sea. The red kettle steams on the galley stove, gleaming new, just as the inter-island ferry chugs into port, its wake rocking boats on each dock in turn, masts of sailboats clanking like out-of-tune chimes. My out-of-tune sea legs still work, and I pour without spilling, the warmth and aroma of tea wafting through the cabin and me dreamily. But the ticking of the kettle cooling seems a reminder that the shaft packing below is dripping too fast and ought to be tightened before the bilge alarm kicks on again. So this poem is sort of me taking a break from the usual spring maintenance chores, which go on and on and on. It's a long process, hours and hours in the engine room, replacing things and tightening things. And all of this by way of saying that this is the first spring that I haven't, in 19 years, that I haven't had to do this, because we sold the boat just late last year. And it's been, actually, it was heartbreaking for both my wife and I. But we've kind of realized that for safety reasons, we were kind of aging out of being safe and effective boat owners. And one of the things I've noticed this spring is that, boy, I'm not over at the dock, you know, 6 hours a day. And so my wife's putting me to work in the garden more often and what have you. Still preparing these poems or looking back on these poems to read today. I find it a little bittersweet.
I imagine so, but Keats, of course, was not a long-lived poet either.
That's true. I hadn't thought of that. But yeah, that is most definitely true. A review that Michael Daly did of this book said that at one point that Keats becomes my alter ego. And I was just taken aback by that. I just couldn't see, you know, where that observation was coming from. And then later I started realizing, well, in some way it is my alter ego, that I, you know, some of the approaches to living here on the island and some of my love of the Northwest is very much wrapped up in the idea of Keats as a boat, and as our boat that took us all over the Salish Sea. So Keats was the reason we named the boat. The boat was named Adagio at first, which all slow trawlers, there are many dozens of Adagios out there because trawlers are slow. Maximum speed is about 7 knots. But anyway, we named it Keats because it's my wife's favorite poet. Well, until I came along, I like to think, but maybe not. And I've always, you know, loved Keats' work. So I have been writing other poems to Keats or about Keats.
Yeah. So we do know that Keats was probably muse to many poets too.
Sort of muse to my life, I think, from the first time I started reading him. And at that point, it might have been just almost a childish notion of the poet dying young and the romantic poet in its best outfit, which I think Keats is the best outfitted romantic poet. But
right. And he lived a life of languishing too, with ailments and such.
Right.
That, so you've got one where you languish somewhat in a boat in the fog.
In fog. I'll tell a little story here, and then we'll get to the poem. We never wanted to take Keats out in dangerous weather, or even, you know, weather that was threatening. But you couldn't help it. You'd come around an island into a passage, and suddenly you'd be overwhelmed with fog, or overwhelmed by high winds, or whatever. So it's just part of the boating life. And my wife and I worked out this system where, first of all, we had very primitive radar and a portable GPS. So we were sort of under-equipped in the first place when we decided to keep the boat as simple as possible, which, by the way, I replaced all the radar and everything else, all the electronics, about 3 or 4 years ago. So the person who bought our boat now doesn't have to deal with a lot of the problems we had. But my wife would take the helm, and I would read the radar, these little green blips and this old-fashioned radar, and keep track of the GPS, and then give her compass readings to follow. And it worked well. Obviously, we didn't sink, or if we sunk, we only got wet, but we didn't. We never had a problem. A boat in fog. Light diffuses on a boat in fog. Moaning horns mark time as it appears. The captain keeps the weather in his log. On watch, we're blind and lost. The engine chugs along with ease, though now through white, white air that light diffuses on a boat in fog. Our helmsman holds the compass course and slogs through wakes from boats she never sees or hears. The captain notes the weather in his log. One blast near, the fog's long monologue of silence fills our straining eyes with fear. Light confuses on a boat in fog. There, a shape goes dark across our bow, a ship upon us. Then it disappears. The captain sights the weather in his log. If our crew sees ghosts or no, a God's eye view must show how fragile we appear in light diffused upon a boat in fog. The captain keeps the weather in his log.
This is a sort of formal poem. I mean, you haven't used a lot of formal tropes in most of your works, but this one you did, the pseudo villanelle kind of echoing.
Right. It's a, you know, a loose villanelle. And I, for some reason, I thought that I wrote it on the boat too, by the way, shortly after this incident. But for some reason, the villanelle seemed like a poem that would work when you're completely fogged in, that, you know, you keep repeating things and you keep repeating actions. And if it was me watching the radar, I'm watching the radar and then switching back to the GPS. And just, it was something that felt right to me at the time about using a Villanelle form to write about being encompassed in fog.
That's amazing poetry. Gary, thank you so much for coming on Sound Poetry.
Well, thank you very much.
This is Sound Poetry, and you've been listening to the Salish Sea Years by Gary Thompson, Broken by Water, the title. I'm your host, David Gilmore. Thank you for listening.